So we're holding on Cliff Bays. I'm going to Aleph, first line of the wide line. We learned yesterday that Rav had said that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen Gadol. We tried bringing a couple of braises to the contrary. We shot them all down. We said those don't prove one way or the other. We said we had a braise that mentioned Zorin eating Kodshin Kodshin, and we thought that referred to Moshe. We said no, it may refer to a Zor eating Kodshin that was brought on Bala. We had the one about Moshe not being able to quarantine Miriam with her Saras, but okay, relative to Saras, he'd definitely be considered a Zor because he's not Bnei Aaron. We have the Braitha that Moshe is called a Melech, implying but not a Kohen Gadol. It could mean a Melech and a Kohen Gadol. Similar to Ketanoi. This is that we actually have a Machlokes Tanoim on the subject whether Moshe was considered a Kohen Gadol or not. Now you have like this. By the snare in Parashat Shmos, you have Moshe is repeatedly refusing over there to go, saying that I'm Kvad Peru, Kvad Loshen, this, that, the other. He finally says, Shlach Nabiyat Tishlach, Hashem sends this mission through the one who you usually send for this purpose, namely Aaron HaKohen, because Aaron was already a Novi for the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. And then at that point, Vayichar Af Hashem Moshe. So as it says, Hashem got angry at Moshe, and he says to him, after all, you know, you want, well, what?
Angry
at the fact that Moshe is refusing over and over. But then he says to him, Haloi Aaron Achicha HaLevi, behold your brother Aaron the Levi, I know that he can speak well, so therefore you'll go and you'll carry out this mission, but you'll have Aaron with you. One second. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha points out like this. Kocha ron akshe b'torah nema b'roshim. Any place where it says in the Torah that someone got angry, there's always an effect of that anger. Rashi says it can be sometimes the effect is that he hits the other person. Sometimes it's that he yells at him. Sometimes it's that he curses them. Rashi gives examples of all those that you can find in various circles. The Zerla Nemabar Rosha. Now it's unusual over here. You don't seem to find any after effect of this anger of Hashem. It says Hashem gets angry at Moshe, but then nothing. Then Hashem continues and tells him, you know, so okay, you'll take Aaron along and he knows how to speak well, so he'll go along with you as your interpreter. Where's the effect of the anger? If it says Charoinah, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha is pointing out, whenever it says Charoinah, so actually, so the Surah Amur on the Prophet from one of the early Achronim explains that maybe there's a difference between a Chalonach of Hashem versus a Chalonach of a human being. If it says on a person that he got angry, okay, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that there's an after effect, because okay, a person is changeable. Sometimes a person is angry, sometimes not. The Prophet may find it necessary to point out that the person got angry, but when you have Hashem getting angry and Hashem doesn't change. So therefore, we have to say that the fact that the prophet expresses it, that Hashem got angry, must mean that there's some kind of an effect from it. So where is the effect over here?
I think it's not angry when you say angry. It's not kind of a desire.
Fine. Ultimately, we can't really ascribe any emotions to Hashem himself anyway. It means that we talk about Hashem in human terms. It means that there's something that could be described, Lamaila, that we would describe using our human terms as anger. It takes it the other way, that you have something in the Lamaila which comes down here to in our human world as anger, whatever. The point is that we can speak of Hashem as getting angry, but usually that would mean that there's some after effect of it, otherwise why point it out? So Rav Shimon Yechoi says, actually here you do have an after effect. Namely as follows, where Hashem says to him, behold, isn't it true that your brother Aaron the Levi? Now the question is, what do you mean, Levi? Bala Kohen. Aaron of the Kohen later on. No. What Hashem means by those words, Haloi Aaron Achichah Levi, on the surface it means Hashem is saying, you Moshe are concerned that you can't speak well to Paro, so therefore you're going to take Aaron along and he's going to help you out. But by using the words Haloi Aaron Achicha Levi, the implication is that Hashem is saying something else to Moshe. Hashem is displaying the results of his anger. Aniya Marti Atakoyan Buhule. My original intention, Hashem says to Moshe, is that you would be the Kohen and Aaron would remain the Levi. Isn't it true that Aaron was supposed to be the Levi? Aksha, but now because you're refusing over and over, who Kohen va'ata Levi? Now it will be switched around. He will become the Kohen. You, Moshe, will remain Levi. So therefore, Rav Shimon Ben Yochai says, so there you see that there is actually an after effect of this anger of Hashem. It's not just Hashem got angry, but then he continues, okay, you don't want to go, so take Aaron along with you. The implication is that Hashem is saying, as a result of this, you have forfeited something that you would have otherwise had. Like this, Aaron would have been the lazy, and now like this, you're the lazy. So that's one opinion, that Moshe forfeited the kahuna altogether. The Chachamim omrim leniskayim Moshe al hashivas man bilum bilvad. The Chachamim say a second opinion, Moshe was made a kohen only for the 7 days of the milurim, because Aaron is not yet ready for it. He has to be trained for it. So therefore, Moshe is temporarily taking over. The yesh omrim, and now you have a yesh omrim, loy koska kahuna elamizadish Moshe. The kahuna only ceased from Moshe's descendants. In other words, Moshe himself had to remain a kohen for the rest of his life. Only what changed was, or what was the original plan, as the case may be, is that like this, Moshe and his descendants would have been Kohen, and then like this, Moshe himself was a Kohen, but he didn't pass it down to his children.
That's because he refused.
Because he refused when Hashem is telling him to go take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim.
To speak to Pharaoh.
So the point is, when Rav was saying before that Moshe, Kohen Gadol Hoya, That would be according to the Yesh Omrim, that Moshe Taka remained a Kohen for the rest of his life. Why did they have him eat the Kodshim, like we said yesterday, because he was busy always talking to Hashem, and therefore he didn't have the time for it. But other than that, he was able to function as a Kohen all those years. All it is what he lost is that his descendants aren't going to be Kohen. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Moshe Isha Elikim, Bon of Yekodol Al-Shevet Alevi, as the Pasuk says, in Yivayom, the contrast, It says over there that Aaron was separated out, that his children will be, that Aaron is Kodesh Kodoshim, and his descendants will be Kohenim. And then the next passage says, Moshe Isha Elikim, Bonav Yikoru Al Shevet HaLevi. Moshe, the man of Hashem, his children are called on, are named after Shevet Levi. In other words, they remain part of Shevet Levi. So the implication is, Bonav Yikoru Al Shevet HaLevi. But he himself is a Kohen. That's where the Yesh Omrim gets the idea that Moshe himself remained a Kohen, because the Pasuk stresses that his children are called as part of Shevet Levi. And he continues, I have another proof for this, that Moshe is considered a Kohen. Pasuk says in Tehillim, it said in Kabbal Shabbos, Moshe v'Aaron v'Kohenav, u'Shmuel v'Kodeshmoy. Moshe and Aaron among his Kohenim, and Shmuel among those who call on Hashem's name. So therefore we see that Moshe is equated to Aaron, and that in both being Kohen. So the question is, my Omer, okay, according to this Yesh Omrim, why do you need two proofs from a prophet? Why isn't the first proof enough? The reason is the Chitema, because you might, two proofs, of Moshe Isha Lekim Bonav Yikaru Al Shevet Alevi, and Moshe Va'aron B'Kohenav. Why do you need two proofs that Moshe himself is a Kohen and his children are not? So the reason is, because the Chitema, because you might have thought to say, L'Dodah Tudukiv, you might have thought to say that the prophet in Divrei Yomim is talking about in future generations. In other words, it's written long after Moshe passed away. So therefore, there's no purpose in writing that Moshe is called part of Shevet Levi, because the moot point, he passed away already anyway. So you could argue that maybe the author of Divrei Yomim, Ezra, or Ezra and Nehemiah, I think it was, because the Gemara says in Bava Basra that most of it was Ezra. Anyway, whatever it is, he may not have bothered writing that Moshe is called part of Shevet Levi, because he's writing hundreds of years later, but that doesn't prove maybe Taka Moshe himself was a Levi when he was living. Therefore, we need the second proof. Therefore, we have a proof from the other Pasuk in Tehillim that we see that Moshe is explicitly called a Kohen. So therefore, the Yesh Omrim says that he remained a Kohen for all the 40 years in the Midbar. Rav, who said that he's a Kohen Gadol, and the Cholik, the Kodesh Shemayim, is following that opinion.
So then we have an example of Kohen Shah and then Kohen Reverse.
So I suppose so. Okay. Fine. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. So Gemara asks, so now the premise, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, how did we get into this? Because we said Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha pointed out that whenever it says in the Torah, Chagoyin Af, that somebody got angry at upset or upset, there's always supposed to be an aftermath. Where was the aftermath of it here? And we answered in the fact that Moshe lost the kahuna for himself or his descendants, as the case may be. So now let's analyze that point. You're telling me that every time it says in the Torah that somebody got angry, there's always an after effect? But you have a pasuk in Parshas Bo. Rosh Hashanah means an actor. Okay? Right, as Rashi points out. It can be that he yelled at him, it can be that he hit him, it can be that he cursed him. But you never just find by Yichar, Rabbi Yisroel ben Korach is saying, you never find by Yichar Ach Hashem, or by Yichar Ach so-and-so, and then nothing. So that's why that's what led him to question our process, and that's why Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai pointed out that there was a roshim over here, because when Hashem is saying Avloi Aaron Achicha Levi, he's implicitly telling Moshe that you've now forfeited the ability to be a kohen, you or your descendants as a case maybe. Okay, but you have a pasuk in Parashas Bo'i regarding Moshe again. So you have over there after Makas Choshech. So Paro calls in Moshe and tells him, fine, you can all go, you can all leave Mitzrayim, but you have to leave your animals behind. You can also take your children. Now, by the way, on that process, by the way, now Moshe says,
take your children?
Well, you leave your animals behind, but you can take your children. And Moshe tells him, nothing doing. We're going to take our animals to bring us korbanos as well. And in fact, you're going to give us animals because we're going to have a lot of korbanos to bring. Interesting idea, by the way.
It's taken the animals to korbanos.
We discussed that, we learned that in Avodah Zarah. We said that the question over there wasn't so much that they may have used them for Avodah Zarah, the problem may have been that they did revere with them, but we discussed over there that that's not an issue for various reasons, including the fact that they wouldn't want to harm the fertility of the animals. We had Sylvia about it in Avodah Zarah. Yeah. Anyway, interesting side thing, by the way. Well, that's true as far as it being also a hedyot. It does become also as a korban if it's nevad. But okay, over here the Gemara explains over there why that wasn't an issue over here. But anyway, interesting. By the way, a side thing: Mam lawyers on that process points out. I don't know if it's his own vote or if he got it from some earlier source. He says, why does Pare say things in that order? He says, you can go, but your animals you have to leave behind. Also, your children you can take with you. You'd expect, you should say, you can go together with your children and then leave your animals behind. So he says, what it is Pare started saying, you can go, but you have to leave behind your animals, also your children. Then he
goes and then
not that. He's saying, you have to leave your animals, also your children, but then he sees Moshe is getting a look on his face, but he's very upset. So Pare quickly adds, can go with you. Fine. Anyway, the point is, so what happens? So Moshe tells him, no, we're going to take along all our animals, every single one. You're even going to give us animals for korbanos. So Pare gets angry. He says to Moshe, don't ever come see my face again. If you do, I will kill you. Moshe says, can you die? You're the Vim Rose Kaponai Thomas. Yeah, on the day you see my face, you'll die. And Moshe says, very well, you spoke at the right time. I'm not going to be seeing your face again, because Moshe is saying implicitly the next time that we meet is when you're going to be coming to me after Makas Bechoras, Pare in pajamas in the middle of the night, as the kid likes to sing. So what happens then at that point? So now you have, beginning of Perek, yeah, Pare in pajamas in the middle of the night. Yeah, you never heard that. Yeah. Okay, come on. Come on. Okay. So what happens next continues in Parashas Bo'i over there, beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. Hashem speaks to Moshe right there in the palace, telling him that Makas Bechoras is going to come, and the Mitzrayim are going to make the Yidden leave Mitzrayim as fast as possible. So Moshe right there in the palace says to Pare, Koyam Hashem Tachasot Alayla Ani Yosef. He gives him the whole speech about how Makas Bechoras is going to come, and all your servants are going to come and beg me to let the Yidden go. And then the pasuk says, Vayese Me'im Pare Bochari Ach. Then it says, Moshe left Pare angry or upset. So again, on the face. He left Pare. He left Pare. No, himself, on the face of it, it means that he himself was upset. And Rashi says on the pasuk, he's upset because Pare had the chutzpah to threaten him that if you ever come see me again, then you're going to die. So there you have also, so the question is, he says that Moshe left Pare Bochari Ach angry, the lawyer Amalei Velimidi, and you don't see that Moshe said anything to Pare. Where is the after effect? Again, you're saying that Charon Ach involves an after effect, and here Marsha points out, you can't use the Tzura Amor's explanation from before that there's a difference between Hashem's anger and a person's anger, because here we're talking about Moshe's anger. And we're asking, where's the after effect? So it must be, the Marashah explains, that's how it is. Whenever you have in the pasuk Charoinah, you always have, either it says explicitly or implicitly, something that happened afterward. What do you have over here? Omer Rish Lakish, Sotra V'yotah. So Rish Lakish says, actually, there was an after effect. Moshe slapped Pare on the face and then left. He went out from Paroi angry. Meaning, and that anger actually had an effect, he actually went and slapped Paroi in the face. Mind you, you do have Mephoshim who explained about it. Raul, for example, talks about that it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually slapped him in the face. It just can mean that he spoke to him such sharp words that like it would be like a slap in the face. Like sometimes you have somebody says something to you that feels like a slap in the face. Yeah, my was big on figurative explanations. Yeah, he explains that tells us something about Paroi's personality.
Yeah.
Then Yehoyada gives another explanation of it. He points out the word star means a side, like sitra afra. The sutra yota can also mean like he turned his back to him when he left instead of leaving respectfully. Whatever it is, there was an actual after effect from it. Maharsha asks the question, in that case, the fact is it still doesn't stay in the pasuk. And Maharsha answers, okay, it would have said in the pasuk, except because of Kavod Malchus it didn't, but it's as if it said it in the pasuk. Okay, so the question is, Mi Omer Rish Lakish Hafi, did Rish Lakish really say that? That Moshe actually slapped or otherwise showed public disrespect to Paroi when he left? Well, Hakshiv, but you find earlier in Parashas Va'era, when Hashem tells Moshe to go start telling Paroi about the matter, the expression is, Hashem tells him, go stand to greet him by the banks of the Nile. And what does that mean? It means Hashem is telling Moshe, after all, Paroi is a king, so therefore show him respect. The Rashi explains, the word lekrosso, it can mean, like in an appropriate way, that you would go meet a king. So, as Rav Yochanan, I'm a Rosho. Well, so to speak, yeah. Rav Yochanan omad rosho hu b'hoyiz panechabai. Rav Yochanan says, no, just the opposite. Likrosa can also mean stand before him like he would stand ready to go to war against him. Stand before him. He's a rosho, so show brazenness against him. So you don't have to respect his kingly dignity. So Rashi points out that you get them both from Likrosa. Marshall points out you can also get both these opinions from the word nitzavza. Because you can find that you have the word nitzav, meaning standing at attention, at respect, like after nitzav ma'yon kofen, and you can find nitzavim as standing brazenly, in a confrontational way, like dosan aviram, yosan nitzav, defiant, yeah, like the dosan aviram, yosan nitzavim, before they were swallowed up in the ground.
What happened is
they defied Moshe. And you have Moshe came to try to make peace with them, to try and talk them out of the rebellion and the Dosan Aviram, Yosem Yisavim, and then Moshe says, okay, that's it, you know, they're all going to have to be swallowed up in the ground. Anyway, the point is, the Maharsha says, you can learn it from the wood when he found it. Anyway, the point is that the Shlokish is saying that Hashem told Moshe, be respectful to Paroi. Rav Yochanan is the one saying that Hashem said, you don't have to be. So how is the Shlokish being the one who says that Moshe slapped Paroi before he left that palace that last time? The answer is April. You're right. You have to flip around the opinion. You have to say that Rav Shlokish is the one who says that you can be chutzpah to him, and Rav Yochanan is the one who says you have to be respectful to him. So therefore, Rav Shlokish, in keeping with his shitta, says that Moshe felt it was appropriate to slap Paroi.
Okay.
At this point, Paroi had already threatened him. So. There is actually an interesting verse that I saw from the Shem Mishmuel, the soccer traveler, who says a deeper idea in it. That there's a long explanation, but the gist of it is that a person's face represents their selam alekim, and especially the face of a king represents their ability to rule over their subjects. Paroi's subjects at that point included the Jewish people. So by Moshe slapping him, as our Gemara is saying, that took away his ability to rule over the Jewish people anymore. Therefore, that made it that now it's a certainty the Jewish people are going to go out of Mitzrayim and they're not going to be ruled over by Paroi anymore. Okay. Rabbi Yannai says in this connection, La'olam tehe emus malchus alecha. You should always have respect for the king. You should always have respect for the king on you. Just did, because you see in those contradictory shlokish, and Rav Yochanan or Rav Yochanan. Fine, the shlokish is allowed to argue with Rav Yochanan. Just did, and he says, because you see in those very same psukim, because Moshe says to Paroi that after Makkos Bechorah,
that,
yeah, well, you hold that with... fine. Yehuda is ready to fight if necessary, but he knows, but first he's coming to try, he's coming peacefully, yeah. Okay.
Fine.
Now, Enos Malchus doesn't mean that you never stand up against the king. You don't be a wimp either, but it means that you at least where it's not essential. La'olam kei Enos Malchus alacha. Enos Malchus means that you speak to him respectfully, but firmly. Dichtiv, and you see the example over here that Moshe himself says at that same time when he's telling Paro what's going to happen when Makas Machoras comes. He says, "V'yodu kol avadecha elei." All of these servants of yours, all these ministers, all these princes or whatever, are all going to come to me and beg me to take the Yidden out of Mitzrayim. The ilu l'didei l'kamalei. But he doesn't say to Paro, you yourself will come. Now, in the event, Paro himself did come. Again, pajamas in the middle of the night. But nevertheless, out of respect for Paro, says Rav Yannai, Moshe didn't spell out in so many words that you yourself are going to come to me. He just said that you're servants. Yeah, but that's the thing. He didn't out of Amos mouth. That's the thing. Obviously, he's speaking very sharply to Paro and telling him, you better let the Jewish people go or else, etc. But he's still, where it's not impinging on that. And he's speaking respectfully like this. Rav Yechanan on Omeha. For Rav Yechanan says, I have a different source for that idea that you have to treat a king with respect.
So that's
Rav Yana's proof that you have to. Yeah. Rav Yechanan on Omeha. For Rav Yechanan says, I have a different source for this idea that you have to treat even a king who's a Russia, that you have to treat him with respect. So you have like this. After the whole showdown on Har HaKarmel, where Leo proved to the Jewish people that Hashem who hurled at him, and everybody said that, and they killed all the Nevi HaBaal. So there had been a drought for a few years before that, and now Elio davened for rain, and rain is on its way. So he tells Ahav, get home as quickly as possible, because otherwise you're going to be stuck by the rain. And the pasuk says, the last pasuk of that perek, the first pasuk of the Torah of Parshas Pinchas, in those rare years where we read that Torah of Parshas Pinchas. Anyway, the pasuk says, V'yad Hashem hoisa el Eliyahu, the hand of Hashem, the meaning of spirit of Nebuah, or spirit of strength, came upon Eliyahu. V'yishaneh Mosnav, he girded up his loins, meaning he put on his belt tightly to hold his clothes up so they don't get in the way. V'yoras l'fnei Ahav, and he ran before Ahav. So Rashi explains, because Ahav is alone, it's not Jericho, it's for a king to go by himself. So therefore, so Eliyahu ran along there accompanied. So we see, therefore, that he had Derech Eretz, even though Achav was a terrible Moshe, nevertheless, the worst thing that he had done. I mean, you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we learned a while back says the worst Averis that Achav did, or the equivalent of the least Averis, the worst Averis that Yerovam did in setting up the Egle Azov and all, are the equivalent of the smallest Averis that Achav did. That's one of the last kings of Yehoshua. Yeah, just to get Hashem angry, yeah. This is true. All right, onward. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Amon himself was assassinated 2 years into his reign, but in general. No, but also Hashem, also the Yadkutim over there that say that Hashem was that Menashe, which was Amon's father, and Amon himself, and spread over the Zohar to such an extent throughout Israel that Hashem said in the end, I'm bringing the Korban because of what they brought about in Eretz Israel, which has never been completely eradicated. Even Yeshayahu made tremendous efforts to try and eradicate it, but we said in the Kinnis a few days ago that still people continue to worship over the Zohar secretly, behind their doors, etc. Yeah.
Who
is
the one that forgot to take away
the Zohar? The
Eglin
Zohar? No.
It just didn't occur to him. You know, it was one of the kids. Took away a lot of the Avodah Zarah, but these two
Eglin Zohar, he forgot to take away. No, I'm not sure what you're talking about. You have the Eglin Zohar lasted among the Aseret HaShavatim until the time of Hoshea ben Ela, when they were taken away as spoiled by the king of Asher, by some Sancheiriv. And then at that point, Hoshea said, fine, anybody who wants to go to Yerushalayim can go. But I don't have any
The Korban, you're saying, was connected to Amon?
Was connected to Menashe. Well, Menashe in particular, because he's the one who started this whole downward trend. But yeah, Amon was the continuation of it. Amon was Menashe's son.
He started
with Yerushalayim? No. The started with Yerushalayim. With Yerushalayim, hundreds of years ago. All right, let's go on.
Who is in between Menashe and Yerushalayim?
Yerushalayim was the first king of Yehuda, of Yisrael. Menashe is one of the later kings of Israel. There's almost 300 years.
One of the kings came in and took away one of the Motazarim and forgot about
the Avodah Zarah. No, I don't think so. Maybe what you're thinking of is the Gemara says that Asa and Yehoshaphat got rid of all the Avodah Zarah in Eretz Israel, but it didn't occur to them to get rid of the Nachash and Nechoshe that Moshe had made. It's sort of a Kiyo thing and destroyed that. Maybe that's what you're thinking of. Okay, well, we'll learn about that before that, Hashem, so the house call. Meanwhile, let's continue with it. All right. Speaking of Moshe being a king, Alma Ola, Bikish Moshe Malchus Volanosnavai. Moshe wanted to be the king. He wanted that kingship should be his, Volanosnavai, but it wasn't granted to him in Hashemayim. Dichtiv, because you find... Yeah. We said before that that's a possibility, yeah. So he wanted Malchus, but they didn't. He wasn't given it to him in Hashemayim. You have in the pasuk when he's by the snare, when he first sees the bush burning, and he wants to see what's going on. Hashem tells him, "Al tikrab haloim, don't come haloim." Now the simple meaning of haloim means here, but it's an unusual word. Usually the word for here would be koi. So therefore, but in haloim el Malchus, the word haloim always refers to Malchus. Shenemar, you have a process that David HaMelech says, Davin Sashem, after he's told that he's going to have, that all the future kings of the Jewish people are going to be from him. So he says, Mi anochi Hashem alekim v'gon m'ki ha-b'yetani ha-daloim, ad ha-loim. Who am I, Hashem alekim, that you brought me until ha-loim? So you see that ha-loim is associated with Malchus. So therefore, when ad ha-loim means till here. Well, in David HaMelech's Tefillah, he means that you brought me to such a tremendous height. From where I was originally, but all the fact that he uses the word haloim, the word haloim represents Malchus, and therefore by Moshe Rabbeinu also, when he's told I'll take Rab haloim, means don't try to come close to Malchus. It doesn't pertain to you. Kugdal officially, yeah. Marshopkin South, by the way, there's a deeper reason why the word haloim has to do with Malchus, and that is we learned in Avodah Zarah about how do they know who's the legitimate king of Malchus based David. Call me Shiroi Lamalchus Oilanta. There was the crown had a special shaped head or a bar running through the middle of it or whatever, and only somebody who had the proper shaped head, it would fit him. Oilanta, it would fit him. Therefore, the word Haloim, which is related to Oilanta, is appropriate to talk about kingship. So it has to be curved, it would have to be whatever, he'd have a dent in it, or whatever the exact is, round, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Mosif Rava, so Rava says, what do you mean Moshe didn't have kingship? We said in the Braisa that we quoted before, Rabbi Shmuel, I mean Yevama Melech, that Rabbi Shmuel says that Elisheva had five advantages over everybody else on the day of the Mishkan's dedication, and one of them is that her brother-in-law Moshe was the king. See, he did have kingship. The answer is, Amar Rava loyal Zarek. Right, but it doesn't mean that Moshe himself wasn't a king. It means it didn't become hereditary in his family, unlike later on it did by Joseph. So that's what Moshe wanted, that it should be hereditary among his children, and Hashem told him, I'll take care of Halo. But Hashem said, it's not for you.
But why?
Because it wasn't.
He
wanted for his children. That's how it is. I mean, Moshe later on wanted that at least that his children should succeed him in the leadership, and Hashem tells him, no, Kachapos Yeshua bin Nun. So, yeah. Moshe thought that his children are going
to
be young.
He did the right thing.
What?
For the tribe of Levi to be...
Moshe himself was from the tribe of Levi. Yeah.
He wanted it because
it's meant to be for Shem Yehuda, but it could also be because Hashem is informing Moshe that your children aren't going to be of your caliber. Okay. So the question is, so you're telling me wherever it uses the expression haloim means it's something that not only for the current generation, but it's meant for future generations, because you're telling me that when Hashem tells Moshe, I'll take care of haloim, doesn't mean you won't be king, it means your descendants won't be. What about by Shoal? You have the expression to see Hava Oid Haloimish. You have a pasuk over there where they're trying to work out using the Urim Batumim, using the Gerdel, who is the new king. Shmuel says, you know, everybody asks for a king to find, you know, you're going to have a king. They use the Urim Batumim, they use the Gerdel, and eventually it comes down to Shoal, and they can't find him, so they ask Hava Oid Haloimish, and then they find him. So the point is the word haloim means haloim, again, means here. Did another person come here that we, but if we're saying the word haloim means Malchus for his descendants, Shoal didn't have a hereditary kingship that went down to his descendants. And who in Zare Loi? He himself became a king, but his descendants didn't. The answer is two possibilities. Boy same or Hahabi Ishbosheth. Number one, there was. Shoal had four sons. Three of them were killed in battle with him at Harav Yavoya. The fourth one, Ishbosheth, Taka became a king and ruled for 2.5 years. So in that sense, there is Aloyim, there is. It became a hereditary thing. It didn't last after that, but nevertheless.
Okay.
The Ibar Yisema, or another possibility, Shiny Shoal is different in Shoal's case. Where after all, it didn't even remain with him. Haloim is supposed to be a kingship that will last for long term. But Shoal, forfeited. Shoal himself forfeited it because of what he did. Well, first there was an even earlier thing by Gilgal, but yeah. Kidur of Elazar, Omer of Chanina, and this is like what Rav Elazar says in the name of Rav Chanina, that he says, "B'shar shapoistim dula l'adam," when Hashem decides that a person should have greatness, "poistim loyal zarei atzei tzadaris," that decision is meant to be for him and for his children until the end of all generations, unless they forfeit it. So therefore, that's how it should have been with Shaul. Shenemar, as you have a pasuk in Eos, lo yigra mitzadik eno, the pasuk says Hashem doesn't withhold his eyes from the tzadik, in other words, Hashem takes, so to speak, personal care of the tzadik, ve'et molochim lakisei degomer, so that there'll be kings on the throne for him, and the pasuk continues, the Gemara doesn't quote the rest of the pasuk, but the rest of the pasuk is, v'yeshivim one netzach, v'yigbohu, he seats them forever, and they become high, but then the next pasuk continues, the Beim Hegis Daiter, but then though, if the person becomes proud, and therefore forfeits that punishment, and therefore forfeits that distinction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilah, then Hashem lowers him. Shenemar is the next. And takes it away. Shenemar is the next. Does take it away, yeah. Shenemar is the next pasuk continues in Eos, the Im Asurim Bazikim, but if they are bound up in chains, meaning in other words, they're chained up in their own gaiva, like they're self-centered within their own gaiva. You lock them, b'chablei oni, then they will be caught in ropes of poverty, meaning in other words, they'll become poor and they'll lose this distinction that they have. So that's what happened to Shaul. The intention was haloim, that Shaul should have a kingship that lasts long term, but because of how he acted, and the thing with not waiting for Shmuel and Gilgal, and later on disobeying Shmuel in the matter of Amalek, therefore he lost it for himself and his children. But in Asur and Bazikin, if they're caught in chains, you lock them with chavlei oni, then they'll be trapped with ropes of poverty, meaning in other words they can lose this distinction that Hashem planned for them if they don't behave properly.
What does it mean if they're caught in chains?
That's what Rashi says. Gavus libam, gorim lahem liyas asurim bozikim, because they're gaizadik, that causes them that now they're tied up in chains, and that you lock them with chavlei oni, and then they get caught with ropes of poverty, and that is caused by them being gaizadik. So that's what happened to Shaul, but the original intention was that it should have been long term. That's the special thing, by the way. That's Hashem promises David that his kingship will be an eternal one in a sense, even if his descendants act improperly and therefore the kingship is taken away from them, it won't be a permanent thing. Unlike, Hashem tells him, unlike Shaul, it was taken away from his family and it's never going to return to them. With David, Hashem is telling him specifically that's not going to be that way. It will be taken away, but eventually it will return to your family. Yeah, Hashem tells David, if your descendants don't act properly, then it'll be taken away. You see, right now, for a couple thousand years now, that came from base David. But it's not a permanent thing, unlike with other families. That was the substance of the promise that Hashem made to David. Okay. All right, now getting back to the topic of our Mishnah, which is which Kohenim do and don't get portions of the Korbanos to eat. So that led us into the whole discussion of Aninus Laila, Aninus Yom, which led us then into this whole discussion about Aaron and Moshe. So now back to the main topic. So the Mishnah had said, Balin Mumin, Bein Balin Mumin, although the Mishnah had said that Balin Mumin, whether it's a temporary or a permanent mum, either way they get a portion of Kodshim and they can eat it. So the Moshe says, Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? That they can eat it, fine. You have a process that says in Parashat Emor that says Lechem Alekav Mikodshei Hakadoshim Men Hakadoshim Yoichel. But where do we see that he gets his own independent portion? So like this, the Tana Rabbanan, we learn it right. So we talked about this briefly at the beginning of the parashah. Now we're getting more into detail. When it says Kol Zohar, when the process says all males, it says that Kol Zohar Bakonim Yoichel Oisa, that refers to Lagavis Balin Mumin. That comes to include Balin Mumin. We discussed about it, how we know what it means to all Yoim, but whatever, yeah. So, Lamai. So we have to ask, what is the process being Marga Balin Mumin for? Ila Achila, is it telling us that they're able to eat Korbanos? That, in other words, they may not get their own independent portion, but if another Kohen gets a portion of a mincha and he wants to invite the Baal Mum to join him, they can. We don't need that. The Pasuk says later on in Parshas Emor that a Baal Mum is able to eat from Kodshin and from Kodshin Talon. So you don't need the Pasuk in Parshas Tav to tell us that he can also eat from somebody else's portion. So therefore, the Pasuk in Parshas Tav must be teaching us that he gets his own independent portion. So in other words, if you have that day consists of 100 Kohenim, and 5 of them are Balin Mumim and the rest are Tumim, those five will each get one hundredth of the Korban, regardless of the fact that they're Balin Mumim. Okay. Can you? Then we learn in another Braisa. Kol Zachol Adav is Balin Mumim. You have another Braisa that also mentions that there's four different places, actually three, we'll see later, where the Pasuk stresses that any three different cases where the Torah stresses that any Kohen can eat the korban. It's actually the expression in each case is the Kohen who does the avodah, Kohen HaMachate Oisa, Kohen HaMakriv, etc., can eat the korban. So that's what we're going to go through now and see what we learn from each one of them.
By the way,
a good question, but the fact is it wasn't all of them, actually. First of all, you had an Ola which was burnt anyway, but one of the Korbanos over there was a Shlomim, and actually Moshe tells Aaron and his sons in Parashat Shemini over there that the Chazei HaTznufa and the Shoik HaTzulma from that, you can eat together with your family. It's only the three Chatzos that they had to eat. As much as possible, but okay, they can't, and it's Moshe, and whatever's left is burnt. Fine, let's say. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa. You have another place, if you have another Pasuk that says Kol Zacho, you have by a Chasuf, it says that Kol Zacho Bakarinim Yerchom Oisa. So we have to figure out what is that Kol Zacho coming to add. Again, the Rabbis Balin Mumim, it comes to include that Balin Mumim get that Balin Mumim. So again, the question is Lamai. What do we need to be married with them for? Ilachila, is it that they can eat from it? Harekarova, we have the Pasuk in Parashas Emor for that. Is it that they get their own independent portion? You already have that by the mincha. So we know it applies to other korbanos as well. But the reason why you need another kol zacho is like this. Because if you didn't have that pasuk, you would think, maybe this din only applies if the person originally was a tam, and later on he developed a mum. Maybe then the Torah is allowing him to eat and to get his own independent portion. Balmum ikri minayin. How do we know the same thing applies even if he was born a balmum? Tamamayma kolzacho. That's why you need the second kolzacho by the chasid. Next. Tan yidach. Then we learn a third braisa. Kolzacho l'rabbis balmum. Now by the osham, it also says kolzacho. So what is that one teaching us? So also l'rabbis balmum. So the mind. Now what does it mean? So we already have all three things, all three details. We have a rib. Why do we need this one? So it's like this. Shiyachol ein li ela bal mum kavua. You would think, if it weren't for the last kol zachar that it says by Osham, you would think maybe only somebody who has a permanent mum can get his own portion and eat. Bal mum over minai. And how do we know it even applies to somebody who has a temporary mum, which eventually is going to heal? Talmud Maimar kol zachar. That's why it says kol zachar. Klapi liar. Which direction are you going? That seems backwards. It seems more logical to say that a Baal Mum over is more likely to be able to eat a share of Korbanos because, okay, he was able to serve in the past. He will be able to serve in the future. He's only temporarily disqualified, as opposed to Baal Mum Kavua is permanently disqualified. So why is the Braisa assuming that if it were for the previous circuit, we would know that it applies to a permanent one but not a temporary one? That seems backwards. I'm Rav Sheshet Eisel. So Rav Sheshet says, you're right, you have to flip around the braisa. Yeah, so you say that it means that you would only know a Baal Mum over. How do you know also a Baal Mum Kavoy? Rav Ashi Omalot. Yeah.
If you have it from Baal Mum over, you can deduce it from
a... No, it's not, no, not necessarily that you could deduce, but at least you could say that you know, because, you, but, if you say that the previous ones apply to a Baal Mum Oiver, but how do we know it also applies to a Baal Mum Kavua? Therefore you need Kozalta. No, a Baal Mum Oiver on the face of it is more lenient. How do we know it? But how do we know it applies even to the worst off Baal Mum Oiver? Therefore you need a Kozalta. You can't learn that from a Kavua Chomer. That would be the opposite of a Kavua Chomer. Rav Ashi Omer LaOlam LeKesef. Rav Ashi says, never mind that. You don't have to flip around the Braisa. The Istrus. No, we still need. You can't say that you do need a pasuk even once you know that it applies to a Baal Mum Kavua. You can't necessarily deduce that it would apply to a Baal Mum Oiver if it weren't for the pasuk. Because, now, on the one hand, you would think that's a Kavua Chomer, but on the other hand, stop it out of something. You could think the other way like this. Key Tomei. Maybe the rule of a Baal Mum is similar to the rule that applies to a Kohen who's Tomei. Ma Tomei Kamad Loi Tohar Loi Ochol. Now what happens? A Kohen is previously Tohar, later on he becomes Tomei, and as long as he's Tomei, he's barred from eating kosher, not even getting a portion, but even eating, and he has to wait till he's Tohar. Ah-hai-nami, so you would think maybe the same thing applies to a Baal Mum. If it's a Mum that is going to heal, maybe as long as he's not corrected, as long as he's not healed, maybe he's temporarily barred from it, like a Tomei.
It's a temporary Mum.
That is why the Braisa had to tell us you need another process to teach us that, no, the same rules that apply to a Baal Mum Kavua also apply to a Baal Mum Oiver.
If you had a rule
for Baal Mum Kavua, you would think, okay, a Baal Mum Kavua is nothing like a person who's Tomei, because a person who's Tomei is not a permanent situation, whereas Baal Mum Kavua is. But you would think a Baal Mum Oiver should be like a Tomei, and he should be disqualified as long as he is there. That's why you need it. If you had a Baal Mum Oiver, then for sure you wouldn't know. You would think, okay, he's only temporarily disqualified. How do you know it applies to somebody who is permanently disqualified? That's why we need both circumstances. Then the Mishnah had said, Kol She'ener Roy V'Chola. The Mishnah had said that anybody who's not suitable to do the avoda does not get a portion of the korbanah. So he says, what do you mean, Goloi? What kind of a rule is that? Are they Baal Mum? Goloi Roy L'Avoida. We just talked about Baal Mum, who's not suitable to do the avoda V'Chola, and yet he gets a portion. The two, and not only that, you have to ask. Not only you have that exception. You can ask. You can deduce from the Mishnah the other way around, Haroi La'avoda Cholek, on the face of it, you should deduce. If the Mishnah is telling us anybody who can't do the Avoda doesn't get a portion, then by implication, anybody who can do the Avoda does get a portion. But I can give you an example of the contrary. Haroi Tomei V'Korbanos Tzibur, because you have the example of a person who's Tomei, when it comes to the Korbanos Tzibur, the Roi La'avoda, where when it comes to the Korbanos Tzibur, he's able to do the Avoda, because Tomei is Choyer or Hotur of a Tzibur. And yet he doesn't get a portion. Actually, Tosfos points out the Gemara had asked that question at the very beginning of the Perek, whether in fact a Tomei gets a portion or not. We answered over there that he does, that he doesn't. Roy Lachila b'Einan. But Tosfos asks,
he's not
Roy Lachila, so therefore he doesn't get a portion. But Tosfos asks, then why are you trying to prove from that? Why don't you prove rather from the case of a Kohen Gadol who's an Oinin and is Roy Lavoida but isn't Tolik? But still we could have asked from that. So yeah, actually some of the Achoinim say that would essentially be the answer. The Gemara would rather prove something from a regular Kohen. Anyway, the point is that the rule in the Mishnah and the implied converse of that rule, neither of them seem to work out.
The rule in the Mishnah is
Kol She'einu Roi La'avoda does not get a chilek, but Baal Mum is an exception to that. And the converse of that, which would be anybody who is Roi for La'avoda is chilek, but that we see that doesn't apply to a Tomei. So the answer is Roi La'achilachama. Okay, the mission doesn't mean anybody who's Roi La'avoida. It means anybody who's Roi La'achila. A Tomei is not Roi La'achila, because a carbon sibber, that's work for Toma, is fine. So that takes care of the second case, right?
Easy way out.
But it also means that when we use the expression Roi La'avoida, but we mean Roi La'achila. Keep in mind also the achila is to a certain extent part of the avoida. The, I mean, it's not one of the four avodas in the sense that we learned earlier in the sector. But after all, part of the idea is kohenim ochel and bialim miskatrim. The kohen eats the korban and the owner gets his full kapara thereby. So in that sense, the eating of the korban is a form of avoda. Even as far as truma, by the way, you have a gemara someplace, I can't remember now where Rav Tarfon points out that eating truma even is considered avoda. Truma is a much lower level than korban. So then I asked, fine, what about the Harei Kotzen? What about, you have the case of a child, Kohen, the Roy Lachila, now he's capable of eating Korbanos, the Enich Cholik, but he didn't get his own independent portion. So if you're going to say the Mishnah means, when it says Roy Lavoda, means Roy Lachila, then a Kohen should get his own portion, but that doesn't work. Even if his father passed away, right. As long as he's a Kotzen before Bar Mitzvah, then he's not doing the Avoda, and he's not getting his own independent portion of the Korbanos. His father can share it with him, but yeah.
They
don't jochen by themselves, but they jochen together with their fathers, right? Actually, with the avoda and the bris mikdash, even though I think technically a kohen is able to do the avoda once he's 13 and has shtei tiferes, but I think as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, and I'm pretty sure Rambam brings up halacha that they generally wouldn't allow kohenim to serve in the bris mikdash until they were 20.
Because?
I guess because they wanted them to be more mature. I don't know. But the answer is, the Gemara says, okay, hold like Katani, fine. The Mishnah hadn't mentioned anything about a cotton. The Mishnah, for that matter, hadn't mentioned anything about hold like Katani rather means like this. You're deducing from the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, kosha ene roi, ene cholik, and you're deducing from that. On the other hand, anybody who is roi is cholik. Fine, the fact is the Mishnah didn't say that. The Mishnah only said the negative. Anybody who's not Roy is not Cholik. The Mishnah didn't necessarily mean to imply that anybody who is Roy to eat, such as a cotton, does get a Cholik. No. But it may be, but now we're saying, but after all, the Mishnah didn't say that, so not necessarily did the Mishnah mean for you to deduce that from it. Okay, the Gemara says, Hashda the Oslach. Fine, once you reach that Tavara, La'olam kidkalam ikra, then you can go back to our original assumption that the Mishnah says Roy La'avoida, and it actually means Roy La'avoida, not like we tried to say that it means Roy La'chila. But, Imishum Tomei, again, you're going to argue that you have the converse, you have a Tomei, who's Roy La'avoida, but it's not Tomei. Fine, Tomei like a Tomei. Again, the Mishnah hadn't said anything about a Tomei. The Mishnah, in fact, hadn't said the converse rule at all. You're just deducing it implied, but it's not necessarily a valid implication. The Imish from Baal Mum. Now you're asking the rule in the Mishnah is contradicted by the case of the Baal Mum. Fine, that's different. Rahman or Rabbi. The Torah is explicitly marve that a Baal Mum, even though he's not Roy Lavoja, is Cholik. So therefore the Mishnah can give a general rule that applies to everybody else.
In other words, you would be right, but the Torah comes
right. To exactly. So in other words, so you have the rule stated in the negative in the Mishnah, which that, the only exception to that is something which the Torah itself carves out an exception. And as far as you want to deduce from it the positive rule, the Mishnah isn't saying such things. So you can't, there's not such a question. The fact that you can find exceptions to it doesn't, is not such a question. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, even if you have a Kohen Tomei when the blood is sprinkled, the Torah b'shatech nechalavim, but later on, by the time they burn the fat on the Mizbeach, which could happen sometime during the night, so he could be Torah by that time, nevertheless, ene cholik, he still doesn't get a portion. The implication, the Gemara says, is called Torah b'shach zirkas damim. But the implication seems to be that if it's the other way around, if he was Torah when the blood was sprinkled, the Tomei b'shach hekta chalavim, but he became Tomei only later on in the day, and then so he was Tomei at the time they grew the chalav, it seems to imply cholis, that he would get a portion. Therefore, masnis into like Abba Shol. So we see from that our Mishnah is not like Abba Shol. The Tanya, namely, we learn in a place, the Abba Sholem, La'olam, Eine Oichel, Adji, Hei Torah, Mishas, Zirikad, Shas, Tekta, Cholom. No, Abba Shol says a Kohen only gets to eat from the Korbanos, and get his own independent portion, that is, if he was Tahar from the time of the Zirika until the time when the Chelev is booked. So both. To Omakra, because the Pazit says, Makra, Vesdama, Shlomim, Ve'es, Achelev. So, not a Bryce, our Mishnah said the opposite, right. And the reason is because the pasuk says the one who offers the blood of the shlamim and the chelev, implying that you need also for him to be tahor at the time of the burning of the chelev. So our Mishnah had quoted that pasuk to say that to show that if he was Tomei during Zrikas Domin, but he was Torah B'Shachas Chalavim, so our Mishnah had used that pasuk to say that he doesn't get a portion, but implying that the other way around he does. Abba Shaul says that you have to consider both things, both the Zrika and the Hekter Chalavim.
But it says
a matter of Ve'et HaChelev. Ve'et HaChelev and the Chelev. So, Boy Ravashi, so Ravashi asks on that, Nitma Ben Tayim Ma. What happens if he was Tahir at the time of the Zrika, then he became Tomei, then he became Tahir by the time they burnt the Chelev, so he was Tahir when both things are done, but he was Tomei in between, and you could have an easy example. He became Tomei with a Sheref, let's say. All he needs is to Tovol and Heref. He was Tahir before the Zrika, so they did.
After the Zrika, he became
Tomei, let's say, by touching a Sheref. He went to the mikveh. He had a head of shemesh. Later that evening, they were going and burning the chalev. So he taught her again. What happened? The shas zrika. This is according to Abba Shaul. The shas zrika over shas haksarabin. Is it that we need him to be taught her when the sprinkling takes place and when the burning takes place, but not necessarily in between? In that case, you have that. He was taught her at both. Oy joma adshei taught her mishas zrika v'ad shas haksarabin. Or maybe it means he has to be taught her throughout that whole interval. From one to the other. And he wasn't, because he was coming in between. The answer is Teiku. The fact that Rav Ashi is asking this question based on Abba Shaul implies that the halacha is like Abba Shaul, and that's indeed how the Rambam passed it. So the regular case is he has to be Tahir at both. If he's Tomei in between, like Rav Ashi's scenario, since the Gemara left it with Teiku, it means you don't give him a portion, but if you're a Tophis one, then you can't take it away from him.
The
Diyamid, right.
Okay.
Well, teiku means when it comes to dinim daraisa, it means you got to be machmir. But in this case, what it means is, it is a din daraisa, but it's not. It's kind of a matter of dinim mamnas. It's a question: is he entitled to his own independent portion, or is it just that he can share in somebody else's portion? A taker would mean we're not going to give him a portion. Again, if there's 100 koinim in the base of, we're not going to split it into 100 pieces. We're going to split it into 99 pieces. We're not going to give him his own. However, if he was tofus, one of the pieces, then fine. Okay, he's tofus, and we can't take it away from him without a clear eye. Amar Rav, or Rav, if you're supposed to be. Rav says, Hai dinner, mirabalozib of Shimon Gamirna, I learned the following din, or the following discussion, that we're going to figure out how we see that, we're going to see how we're, so again, we're going back to the fact that the Pasuk mentions, in three different places, the Pasuk mentions that the Kohen who offered a particular korban eats it. Now the fact is, it's not exactly like that. It's not that, for example, if I bring a shlomim and a certain kohen is matched with that, does the zrika, let's say, only he can eat from that shlomim is split among the entire base of that bit. And the same thing with a mincha, and the same thing with a chassos, and everything else. So why in those three places is the Torah stressing that the kohen who does the avodah eats the korban? So
there are more people who can.
If it's all kohen, right. So Rav says, Hai dinim Rav Elazar ben Shimon Gemirna, I learned the following din, the following discussion, from Rav Elazar ben Shimon, very interestingly, Ja'omar b'beis hakiseh, that he said it in the bathroom. Now, how is he saying it in the bathroom? That we're going to ask at the end, after we go through the whole discussion, we're going to get back to that point, how he could say Divrei Torah in the bathroom. So wait. No. The bathroom. Beis HaKisa means the bathroom. But wait. Half cup, and we'll get to it. That's the Shem. Okay. So the laws of Reb Shimon said as follows. Danta. We can start a discussion as follows. Imagine the following scenario. But Tvulyoim. Imagine the scenario. A Kohen to the Tvulyoim comes, Omar, and he says to another Kohen, he says to the Kohen who's giving out the pieces of the Korbanus, he says, Kenli mi mincha ba'oichol. He says, give me a portion of a mincha that a Yisrael brought today, and I'll eat it this evening. Right now, I'm a Svul Yoim. I can't eat it now, but this evening, when I'm completely Torah, when I had a head of Shemesh, I'll be able to eat it.
I can give it now and later on.
What do you mean?
So,
no. The Svul Yoim can think to argue, give it to me. Okay, maybe not give it to me in my hand, because I'll be Matameh, but okay, set it aside for me in the near. Yeah. So the answer is, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, imagining the scenario over here and saying, no, the other Kohen can answer him as follows. I can make a Kavah Chomer to prove to you that you shouldn't have it. Madach, in a case where you have a stronger position, v'chatoscha, namely when it comes to your own chatos, we have a din that we learned back in Bava Kama a couple of years back. Now normally you have the avoida of each day is done only, or each week rather, is done by the mishmar that's on duty that week. Usually a kohen who's not from that mishmar is not allowed to come in and do the avoida, except in the Yom Tov. But no, not on that exception. He has to be part of the mishmar. But
even if they agree,
But you have one exception that we learned in Bava Kama, namely if that kohen from another mishmar has a chatas or other korban of his own to bring, then he can bring it even in a week that's not his. So let's give the mishmaris names. The first mishmar is named Yehoyariv, the second one is named Yedaya, for example. So let's say you have, it's the week of the mishmar of Yehoyariv, the first week of Nisan. Suppose you have now a kohen from the mishmar of Yedaya, the second mishmar, has a chatas. The other Kohenim can't tell him, fine, you give it to us and we will be makir it to you, and we'll get to keep the meat and the skin of it. They also can't tell him, no, go away and come back next week when it's your Mishmar's turn. He is entitled to go and do the avoida of it himself and keep the skin of it for himself and be able to eat the meat of it and be able to join in eating the meat of it. Not eating all the meat of it, rather, that's giving out of it.
He has to get some to
the third one. Well, yeah, because they're Mishmar. But the Kohen who's distributing the portion tells the Kohen of the Tvor Yom, look, when it comes to a chatas that you're bringing, you have a stronger position because regardless of what week it is, you're able to come and be mak with your own chatas, and you get to do the avodah of it, and you get to keep the skin of it. So therefore, yet, d'chisicha mechatas Yisrael, yet you're pushed off from receiving a portion of a chatas that a Yisrael brought, because a Tvor Yom, as we said before, does not get, as we said at the beginning of the parak, a Tvor Yom does not get a portion of a carbon, until he's completely charged. Therefore, so he continues, Makam Shohura Koychacha, so in a case where you have a worse position, namely b'minchascha, in your own mincha, because if you yourself, you Kohen Tvor Yom, if you were to bring a mincha, you wouldn't get any portion of it to eat, because a mincha of a Kohen is completely burnt. So he tells him, it's always burned. That's the word. Yeah. Ein edin shadicha chamim minchas Yisrael. So you can tell them, shouldn't it be a kavah chaimer then that I should push you off from getting a portion of the mincha of Yisrael?
If your
own chatas, you have a stronger position, but if chatas of Yisrael, you have a weaker position because you're a Tvor Yom. So a mincha, where you yourself, your own mincha, you have a weaker portion, a weaker position. How much more so a mincha of Yisrael? So he continues. Because the Minchas Yisrael is eaten, but the Minchas Kohen is burnt. So he asks him, so the Tvor Yom can continue. I can slug up your Kavah Chomer. Uma in the Chisani Mechatas Yisrael. Fine, you can argue you push me off from getting a portion of a Yisrael's Chatas, because you can argue Shekshem Shiyopa Kohi Kafiyopa Kohi. Fine, you can argue I don't have any stronger position than you do. A Chatas of Yisrael, we all share in Ephraim, as long as we're members of the current Mishmar. So fine, therefore you can argue that you have the right to push me aside and not get a portion of it because your equally strong claim to it overrides mine. What do you think? How do you think, though, you can push me off from a mincha of Israel? Yeah, but a mincha not. Where, after all, both of us have the same equally bad position, where if either of us, Kohenim, were to bring a mincha, it would be burnt. So therefore, you have no stronger claim to a mincha than I do. Why should your claim to it override? That's the point. When it comes to your mincha, you have no claim, and neither do I. So why should you think by mincha of Yisrael? Why should your claim be any stronger than mine to push me aside?
What would be the strong claim by Yisrael?
By Yisrael's mincha, because Kohenim share Yisrael's mincha.
They eat it,
yeah. So therefore, given that the Tvor Yom is able to slug up the Kavah Chomer that the Kohen distributing the portion is made, therefore, so now we wouldn't know one way or the other, therefore, Harehu Omer, so the answer is, the Pasuk therefore stresses by the Mincha, Lakoyen Hamakruv Oysa Loisia, to the Kohen who offers it, to him it will be, implying it doesn't mean only to that Kohen, it means to all the Kohen who are able to be Makruv. Meaning, therefore, to Omer Loi, so in other words, not Omer Loi, so he tells them, Boy Hakriv Ve'echol, fine, go ahead and be Makruv it, and then you could eat. But since you can't be Makruv it because you're a Tvor Yom, then go away. So that's how we dispose of his argument, says Rabbi Elazar. He could have prove using logic that he should be entitled to a portion of this mitzvah, even though he's a poor yom. The pasuk tells us that the korbanos are only given out like kohen hamakriv oisa, which means not the actual kohen who did the avoda, but any kohen who was capable of doing the avoda. Plus the bar mormon, we said before. And since he's not, it's poor yom, then therefore he's out. Next, the Kohen Tzvur Yoyim can argue, fine, ken li mechatek Yisrael v'oichol. Fine, give me a portion of Yisrael's chatas, and I'll do that. Amalai, and again, the Kohen is giving out a portion, being a smart guy, answers him with a kavachomer. Amalai, umad lachem shahura kosebi minchati, madach in a case where I have a weaker portion, namely when it comes to my mincha, a weaker position when it comes to my mincha, because again, the mincha of a Kohen is burnt. And yet I have a strong enough claim to be able to push you aside from getting a portion of Yisrael's mitzvah based on the pasuk we just quoted. The one who offers it, meaning the one who's capable of offering it, is the one who gets the portion. Yeah. So makam shiyafa koichi mechatzavachatasi. So then the Kohen is giving out the portion. Says so when it comes to a chatas, where if I bring a chatas, I have a stronger position. Because again, me being a Kohen, I can offer a chatas anytime during the year I want and do it myself. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that I should be able to push you aside from getting a portion of Yisrael's chatas? Because even with my own chatas, I have a stronger position. With my own chatas, where I'm how much worse are with Yisrael's chatas? Right. So the Kohen Tzvur Yoyim can answer, no, but I can slog up your kavachomer. Okay, but you know why you were able to push me aside from Minchat Yisrael is because fine, you have a weaker position over there, but I also have a weaker position because again, Minchat Kohen is burnt and Minchat Yisrael is not. How can you push me away from eating a portion of a Yisrael chatas? Where your position when it comes to that Yisrael chatas is just as strong as mine, because I'm also a Kohen, and on the face of it, I should be able to eat it. Well, he's a Tzvur Yoyim, but he's arguing tonight I'm going to be able to eat it, therefore I should be able to get a portion. So therefore, in order to forestall that, Harei or Omer, that's why when it comes to the chatas, the pasuk has to say, Kohen, I'm a chata ofei yechlana, the Kohen who does the chitui, who does the avoda of it, meaning the zrika, is the not the actual one who's doing it, but the one who could do it, is the one who, therefore, the Kohen who's giving out the portion tells him, boi chatei ve'echol, good, come, do the chitui, and then you can eat. But since you can't do the chitui, because you're a Tzvur Yoyim at the time the Kohen is being brought, then tough luck. So that's how we get him out of that. So that's it. So therefore, go away, and then you don't get your own portion of it. You can share in somebody else's portion tonight, but you don't get your own portion today. Next, Amalei. Next, the Kohen Tzvur Yoyim also being a smart guy and wanting to get some portion of a korban, he tries a third tack. Amalei. So he says the Kohen is giving out the portion. Kenli mechaz of a shoyt v'oichol. Fine. You prove to me that I can't get a part of a mincha. You prove to me I can't get a part of a kappa. But give me a portion of a chaz of a shoyk from the shlomim that somebody brought today, whether it's Yisrael or a Kohen, and I'll eat it tonight. After Heir of Shemesh. Amalei, so the Kohen who's giving out the portion says, no. Again, I have a kavachomer to prove that not. When it comes to your chasas, where you have a stronger position because you're able to be makir with your own chasas anytime during the year, and yet I was able to push you off from eating from a chasas of Yisrael based on the pasuk that we said before. Even though your koyach is stronger when it comes to your chasas, you still can't eat a chasas of Yisrael, right? So then when it comes to a shlomim, where you have a weaker case by a shlomim, namely because by the chatas, the Kohen gets to eat the whole thing, except for what's burned on the mizbeach. A shlomim, the Kohen will only get a small portion, the chaz of the shoyt.
They
only get the chaz of the shoyt, yeah, the rest goes to their own. So in a case of shlomim, where you have a weaker position, where you only have cause of a shoyk from them, shouldn't it be a kavachomer that I should be able to push you aside and you don't get a portion? So again, the Kohen who's a Tzvur Yoyim can answer back, no, because ma'im d'chisani mechatas, because you can argue fine, you were able to push me aside mechatas, shekein hurak toshi, a chatas of a Yisrael, Because you can argue, in a certain sense, I have a weaker position in a chatas compared to a shlomim. It's true, a chatas, I get the whole thing, versus a shlomim, I only get a small portion. On the other hand, the fact is, with a chatas, even when I'm tahor, I can't share any part of a chatas with my family. I myself have to eat it in the azara. So I have a weaker position that I can't give it to my wives and my avodim. What makes you think you can push me aside from chaz of a shaykh? Where I have a stronger position than a chata because I'm able to give it to my wife and my servant. How would we know that not? Therefore, you need a third pasuk. That's why it says by a shlomim that the chaz of a shaykh, like koyin azorik, that a shlomim lo yiyah. That to the Kohen who sprinkles the blood of the Shlomim, to him it will be. And again, it doesn't mean only to him. It means to any Kohen who's able to be Zorik. So therefore, he tells him, both Zorik Be'echol. But therefore, go ahead and sprinkle the blood, and then you'll be entitled to eat. But if you can't, because you were Tohoyim, then you don't get. If you were Tohor, you would have been able to sprinkle the blood. Therefore, you'd be entitled to a Chalik. But because you're Tohoyim and you can't, and the prophet says, I'm Zorik as Dama Shlomim, then that's it. You're out. Because again, you may have a very nice Kal V'Chomer that a Shlomim is in a way stronger than a Chassid, but the Pasuk is telling you that not.
The Pasuk is telling you
that only has Zodek as Dama Shlomim, only the one, the same way as the previous Pasuk. Only the Kohen HaMachate, only the Kohen HaMachid, yes, so in each case, but that's where the Lazarus of Shimon is explaining with his whole dialogue why the Pasuk needs to tell us with three different Karbanas that the Kohen who does the Avodah gets the portion. Because each one, you could think that the Kohen Tevoyon could think to make a Kavachomer or to slug up a Kavachomer and argue that he should be able to get it.
And each time the Pasuk has to tell us it's not.
Right. But the result is, Yot Tevoyon, Kula B'chamur of Al-Roshay. So the result is the Tevoyon leaves with a Kavachomer on his head. Like, in other words, he hasn't been able to accomplish anything with them. Yeah, well, okay, but it's on his head, like he has it in his head, but he wasn't able to do anything with it. Yeah, okay. And he has the Onin, who also doesn't get a portion of the Kobanas on his right side, and the Mechot HaKapara, who also doesn't get a portion of Kobanas on his left side. All three of them walk out in the same disappointment. The Malbim explains a vote on it, why the expression Onin Mimino and Mechot HaKapara Mismoilai. He says because an Onin in a way is worse off than the Tevoyim, because we learned earlier that he's not going to be able to eat Kachem by night either, the Tevoyim will. On the other hand, the Mechot HaKippurim is better off than the Tevoyim, because once he brings his Karbanos, even if it's the middle of the day, right then he can start eating Kodshim, as opposed to the Tevoyim, that's the way it's over the evening. Okay, so yeah, so that's that. Okay, but now, Porich Rabachoy, so now Rabachoy comes in with a Kasha. The expression Porich Rabachoy, Tosfos points out, is a bit of an unusual expression. The Tosfos says that this Rabachoy, Tosfos brings that this Rabbi Choy is not one of the regular Amiroyim. This is Rabbi Choy. Tosfos says Sha'asa Hashi'iltos, the one who wrote Shi'iltos, Shahoyim Rabbanan Tzvuroi, the Bosser Rabbinah Rabashi. He was one of the Rabbanan Tzvuroi in the generation after Rabbinah and Rabashi. So this that he's saying that he wrote Shi'iltos, I've seen an explanation that may be wrong, that may have been interpolated in Tosfos wrongly, because the author, the Rabbi Choy who wrote Shi'iltos, lived like 300 years after Rabbinah and Rabashi. It doesn't make sense to describe him. He was already one of the Goyim. You can't describe him as after Rabbinah and Rabashi. That would be like describing ourselves as after the Shach and the Taz. It's like, you know, it's 300 years different. So therefore, more logical to say that he means Rabbi Choy from the Rabbanan Tzvuroi. And the words Sha'asa Shi'iltos were put into Tosfos by mistake. Anyway, the point is, so Tosfos says that therefore, so sometimes you find from the Rabbanan Tzvuroi that they have unusual expressions in the Gemara. So this is one. Okay. Anyway, so he asks as follows. Lemele, okay, so the Beloved Reb Shimon is given this whole scenario where the Tevoyim is trying to get portions of the Kobanas in hand. Lemele, how about let the Tevoyim try a fourth possibility? Ken Lema Bechor Vartal? Why can't he tell him, give me some of the Bechor and let me eat it? That you don't have any of these arguments before. And the answer is, we could say maybe not, because Mishum Da'omel, and the argument he could use as follows, Mishum Da'omele, now he can argue as follows, the one who's giving out the portion. When it comes to a chatas, where, as we said before, I have a weaker position because I can't give it to my wife and my avodim, and yet my claim to a portion of the chatas is strong enough to push you aside from getting a portion of Yisrael's chatas. Mokam should yoffer koichi b'bachor. Well then, in a b'chor, where I have a stronger claim to it, the kula dili, because the whole b'chor is eaten by the whole b'chor is eaten by the koyanim. Unlike the whole b'chor is eaten by the koyanim.
Unlike what?
Unlike the shlomim, for example. So how much more so I should have the ability to push you off from it. By the way, you have the Rashba and the Raivad learn, among other things, based on this Gemara, that a Bechor is only meant to be eaten by the male Kohenim, like Kodshe Kodshe. Yeah, that's why he would only mention the Kula Dilihu, instead of mentioning that I instead of saying anything, he was giving it to his wife and children. Okay, the Rambam Paskin's not like that, though. Anyway, the Rambam Paskin's that a Bechor can be given to the wife and children, to the wife and slave, basically. The Mishnah just says, "Abchor ba'maisa la'pesach kodshim kas shina ba'achalos and abchor nechal akoyinim ba'maisa la'cholam." But it doesn't say koyinim and their wives and children. So the tzvuyoyim can answer back. Mind the chisani mechatos. Okay, but you pushed me aside from mechatos. Shekshen shahura koychach kachura koychi, where you and I have the same bad position in it, where we can't give it to our wives, etc. How can you push me away from the bechor? Where we both have the same strong position in it, where we're both koyanim and we can eat a bechor. So Rav Achoy is asking, why didn't Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon add this fourth case and say the reason is, again, because you have a pasuk to forestall that, because the pasuk says, Harei Oimer, as Zomam Kizrak on Mizbeach, Ve'eschel b'mtachir, the pasuk says, you should sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, and you should burn their chalev, and then the pasuk continues, of Sodom Yalach, and their meat should be for you, implying, therefore, the Kohen who's giving out the portion can tell him, Bozroi for Ephel. If you're able to sprinkle the blood, then you're entitled to a share, but because you're a Tvulyon and not. So Rav Achoy is asking the same logic and the same scenario that Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon was using for the other three korbanos, why isn't he used for a Bechor? That is Tvulyon Ken. The answer is the Idach, because Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon didn't bring that in, because Parish, because he says you could slug up that discussion very easily, you could slug up that proof very easily. The pasuk doesn't say the meat goes to the Kohen and sprinkles. Unlike the other ones where it says like Kohen Amakliv Oisa Loitia or like Kohen Azorek Loitia, etc. Here it just says, you should sprinkle the blood of Sodom, Yalach. So therefore, Mixum of Sodom, Lakohen Azorek, of Sodom, Yalach. It says the meat should be for you. Akhil Lakohen Acher. It says that, of Sodom, Yalach. Which could imply even Akhil Lakohen Acher. So maybe it can even apply to a different Kohen who's not able to do the Avodah. So therefore, Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon didn't bring that in because you wouldn't have a solid proof one way or the other.
Since it just says
of Sodom, Yalach, instead of spelling out that it belongs to the one who does this with it. Okay. Now getting back to the beginning of the story, we said that Rav said, I heard this din from Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon in the bathroom. So the question is, how could Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon do that? How could he say this whole discussion of Torah in the bathroom? Well, Amar Rav Babachana Amar Vechan, and Bechol Mokam Mutala Harher Chutmi Mechus Beit HaKisre, you're allowed to think words of Torah anywhere, except for in a bathhouse or in a bathroom. The answer is, well, only so shiny. It's different when it was an oinah. Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon was constant, words of Torah were constantly in his mouth, and therefore even when he was, even he couldn't help himself thinking words of Torah. So the fact of the matter is still, how is he saying it such that it's considered an onus? One second. So you still have to ask the question though, okay, but how is he saying it and Rav is hearing the whole thing and not interrupting him? So Rav Yaakov Emden, in fact, brings in his Kedushim on the Gemara over here. He says, therefore you see from that you're not obligated to stop somebody. If he's l'onus and he's saying words of Torah while sitting in the bathroom, like in this case, you're not obligated to stop him. Because he says, obviously, you're not talking about Rav wasn't sitting in the bathroom with him. It's impossible that both of them would have forgotten halacha and all. It must be Rav was sitting someplace nearby. He overheard Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon was saying it, and he didn't say anything, so he's not obligated to. Because if it's an onus, and you do have some of the Mephoshim, though, who understand the Gemara somewhat differently, who say that what it means is Rav Elazar ben Shimon thought this whole thing in the bathroom. Later on, he came and taught it to Rav in the Mishnah and told him, you should know I thought this whole idea up in the bathroom. So therefore, no proof from that if Rav had heard him saying this, yes, he didn't hear it. Yeah, that's this whole scenario. In halacha, now in halacha, you actually have the Gemara brings in bracha that a talmid chacham is not allowed to stick around in mevoyeh talmid chacham. It's in a dirty alleyway because inevitably a talmid chacham thinks we're the Torah and he's not going to be allowed to. However, even a talmid chacham has to go to the bathroom. The halacha actually is as Rodin Shulchan Aruch, that's what everybody brings it in Hilchos talmid Torah. If he does end up thinking we're the Torah inside and even speaking them, if he can't help it, then it's not. He hasn't committed an avera because it was an oinah. As we see from our Gemara over here. It's considered an oinah. So obviously, if he can distract himself, so much the better, but nevertheless, it's not considered that he committed an avera. There is actually a chassidish avort on that, but it's brought, I've seen it from a Kamayoner, and I've seen it from a couple of others, the Kozik Lover and others, that the avort is, the deeper idea of it was that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon realized if he had this whole idea of Torah in the bathroom, it must be that it was Min HaShemayim that he should elevate the sparks of Kedusha that are there and take them out of Tumah, and therefore he felt entitled to do that, he being on the level that he was, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, who was one of the Bnei Ali. So for now, each one of us is not necessarily appropriate. Well, again, like it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's not for Thomas Chacham who can't help himself thinking and speaking of it, and it's not an Avera, but still, obviously, if you can avoid it, then it's better.